Welcome to another V-Wave podcast. Today we're speaking with Wayne Belcher. And Wayne is putting together a sectional journey from the source to the sea on the Colorado River. And he posts on Facebook where when he does a new section, and I've been following him for a while, and we met the other day, and I thought, oh my gosh, I should ask Wayne to tell us a little bit about what he's doing. So good afternoon, Wayne. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much, Tom, for this opportunity.
Oh, thank you. Wayne, what got you into the idea of journeying on the Colorado River from its source to the sea?
Well, I started in 2016, and like all good adventures, it was the result of a tragic breakup with a girlfriend that I was trying to get over. So I had talked to a friend about kayaking, and I had gone on a couple of kayak trips with the Boy Scouts before. And so I bought a Pelican $300 kayak, and I had decided that I was going to kayak around Lake Mead. The shoreline is getting less, but it was at that time, I think it was about 720 miles. And so I was doing I've done quite a bit of it, but I did the section from Pierce Ferry, portaging around the Pierce Falls, of course, to South Cove, and was just enamored with the flow of the river. And I was with another work colleague. We're both hydrologists with the Department of the Interior.
Okay.
And so we ended up talking about John Wesley Powell and his journey. And so right then and there, I decided that I was going to boat out of sequence and over time, not all at once, the John Wesley Powell route from Green River, Wyoming, all the way down to the Overton arm of Lake Mead.
Okay.
And I did that over 3 years, and I did it out of order, but that was the first section I did, and then the second section I did was the section below Glen Canyon Dam to Lee's Ferry, and then I did the Grand Canyon, and I did the whole power out with a combination of commercial rafting companies, do-it-yourself rafting companies, motorboating, because I loathe paddling on lakes. So on the reservoirs, I used Flaming Gorge, Lake Mead, and Lake Powell. I rented a motorboat and kayaking and canoeing. And I finished that in September 2019.
Okay, hang on a second. I want to back way back
okay.
Here.
Okay.
Your initial thought was to paddle the shoreline of Lake Mead.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you've done a lot of that now.
I've probably done about maybe a quarter of it.
Oh.
And I kind of put that on hold.
Okay. Of that 25% roughly that you've done, what was the coolest thing you saw paddling the shoreline of Lake Mead?
I think for me the coolest section was that initial section that I did on the Powell route, because the lake had dropped so low that it was river again from Pierce Ferry to South Cove.
Got
it. It was just fascinating. It was just beautiful, and there were a little bit of low-level white water that at that time I was not used to doing any of that.
Okay.
And for me, it's just I fell in love with the river at that point.
Okay, so the coolest thing you found paddling the shoreline of Lake Mead was the Colorado River.
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so now moving forward.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm trying to figure out What? So your concept then moved to run from Green River, Wyoming, to the Overton arm of Lake Mead. Have you done that entire section now?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you've got the Green River to Lake Mead, Green River, Wyoming. All right, so let me think about this.
Yeah.
What that meant from Green River, Wyoming, was you needed to go down the Green River a little bit on actual river until you got into the flat water of Fontanelle, is that right?
Flaming Gorge.
Of Flaming Gorge. So you're below Fontanelle.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So then you go through the flat water of Flaming Gorge. How did you get around Flaming Gorge Dam? Do you just like pull up at the nearest ramp and then go to the spillway ramp at the bottom of the dam and then off your, is that how that works?
No, I rented, that was the other one that I did on Flaming Gorge. I forgot to mention that. On Flaming Gorge Dam, I rented a boat at the Manila boat ramp the Manila Marina, and then over 2 days, went all the way up to Firehole Canyon and then back, and then did back to the Manila Marina and then up to Flaming Gorge Dam and back.
Okay.
So I did two sections. And it's the interesting thing about that particular run is it's wildly different because above Manila, you've got this high desert, and it has its own beauty, but the canyony part, the Flaming Gorge part, is downstream of down lake, I guess,
right,
of Manila, and it was just insanely gorgeous.
Hmm. So. Yeah, yeah. So you mean so then you would have put in at the bottom of Flaming Gorge Dam at what they call a spillway ramp there. Is that right?
Right. Right.
And then gone through what they call Section ABC.
Yeah, and took out at Swallow Canyon.
Okay. And that is the last vestiges of Flaming Gorge, is that right?
Yes.
And
I understand, yeah.
Okay, and I've heard that is some stunning canyon. Makes me, of course, wonder about the rest of Flaming Gorge, which ended up underwater.
Right, and that's the one thing that, you know, gives me, you know, that you think about is, and especially the section that I did below Glen Canyon from the dam to Lee's Ferry, that's the last unflooded part of Glen Canyon, and it just hurts with how beautiful that is and what was flooded out above the dam.
Yeah.
It's painful to think about.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay, so you took out it at the top of Swallow or the bottom of Swallow?
Whatever the boat ramp is there, the Swallow Canyon boat ramp. So I think it's at the bottom.
And that was called Swallow Canyon because of the cliff swallows that were there. Is that right?
Yes, that's my understanding from reading Powell's account of his journey.
And did you see any when you were there?
I did not. I was actually looking for them, but we didn't see it.
Okay. All right. So then from there, the river goes down through, what is the name of the park there? Is it Browns Park?
It's Browns Park, yes.
And then into the gates of Lodore.
Right, yeah. My friend Dan and I, that was one of the last sections that I did. We paddled from Swallow to Lodore in September 2019. I did it in sections, out of order, and over 3 years.
Okay. All right. So I'm just going to geographically go along the basin, and then you can say, well, we did this, you know, last, or we did this first, or, you know, this was in the section there. I'm just going to try to make my way along. So you guys paddled to the gates of Lodore. Then you would have run Lodore Canyon, where you put in at the Lodore Canyon Ranger Station, and then you pick up the Yampa River coming in from the east,
Right.
At the end of Lodore Canyon, and of course you have to go through some rapids in there. Were you in? Was that a commercial trip, or were you in your own little boat? How did you do that one?
I was on a commercial trip, but that is, I spent about half of the trip in a inflatable kayak, which I actually loved so much that when I got off the river, I bought my own NRS Outlaw.
Okay.
Which I love that boat. So, and I've done up to class 3 in it.
Okay. All right. And that got you to the Split Mountain Ramp at the mm-hmm. bottom of Split Mountain Canyon.
Yeah.
Okay. And now, downstream from there is the formidable Uinta Basin. And I use formidable with meaning and gusto, because while you might find a class 2 rapid if you're lucky, you will find one of the largest concentrations of mosquitoes on the planet.
Exactly.
In that wonderful section. How did you handle that area?
Well, we had, this was a do-it-yourself rafting trip, and we had rented a kit from an outfitter in Bernal.
Okay.
And, you know, they dropped us off, and we paddled. I can't remember if it was 5 or 6 days to do the, I think it was 105 miles to San Wash, but the mosquitoes were just horrendous.
When did you go?
That was in 2019.
What so, time of year?
I believe it was in July.
Oh, you're a tough man. Wow.
Not really. I mean, it was weird because, you know, obviously it's a lot of rowing, but we
I'm saying tough here because I'm thinking mosquitoes.
Yeah, we figured out that, I mean, when we're rowing down the river, we can hear them in the bushes. It's
yep.
Just like this drone.
Constant high pitched whine.
Yeah, we figured that they didn't really get bad for us on shore until the sun started to set. So we would immediately pull over, we'd get camp set up, including setting up tents and our groover, and then you know, make dinner and get in our tents as soon as possible. There were three of us, and one of our party, based on his misinterpretation of my preparedness, because I usually sleep outside of a tent, but I always bring a tent with me. He did not bring a tent.
Oh.
So he was sleeping out with all the mosquitoes, and he looked like a pincushion at the end of the trip.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
I felt wow. really bad.
So just so you know, you might want to go back and run that section in April.
Okay.
It's lovely. It's really nice without the bugs. But I admire your drive right there to attempt that in July. Very good. But you do get to go through the wildlife refuge, and that's some stunning country in there.
As far as
birds. What else did you see in that section that kind of made you pause or that you found interesting?
It was one of the more developed sections of the river that we did, that part of the green, with all the alfalfa farming and the oil, petroleum extraction.
Okay.
Because we could see a lot of the grasshopper-like jack pumps
mm-hmm.
The river, and, you know, we could hear explosions going off on something that they were doing.
Huh.
So a lot of the development, it was just, and then, you know, we camped overnight near Oray, and, you know, there's these big oil tanks there and quite a bit of bridges and roads along the river. So it was pretty developed, but at the same time, you know, there's still some really nice areas to the wildlife refuge. It's just gorgeous.
Okay.
So, and quiet.
And then that takes you to a place called Sandwash.
Mm-hmm.
Did you startle the ranger when you kind of walked up to the ranger's house and he said, "Where are you from?" And you said, "Upriver."
Well, no, the outfitter from Bernal was actually there probably just a few minutes before we got there. We timed it almost perfectly. We told him that
great.
We'd done it out at 11:30, and he was there with the truck and trailer, and they had shuttled my car down, and so we just traded the boat for my keys to my Jeep, and then we got our stuff off and helped them de-rig the raft, and then we were on our way.
Nice. Okay. So that's the Sandwash there is the end of the Uinta Basin section and the start of the Desolation Gray Canyon mm-hmm. section. When did you run what's called Deso Gray?
I think that was in, let's see, that was in 2018, and I believe that was in June 2008.
Okay. What do you recall of that run, that section?
I recall it was kind of an intimate thing. It was a commercial trip, but there was only one boat with a 21-year-old boatman out of Moab,
okay.
And there were four of us, and we had all of our stuff together, and it was just kind of an intimate trip, and we all helped out with everything. So it was kind of almost like a do-it-yourself trip, and we were doing rowing. I had one of the younger people, the son of our receptionist at work, came along, and he fell in love with whitewater rafting. And much to his mother's chagrin, came back and said, "I want to be a boatman."
Okay.
So, but now he just kayaks a lot.
Okay. Okay. So that ran you through Steer Gulch, Wire Fence, a number of rapids that are, you got to pay attention to on that run, but also some pretty stunning canyon country there.
Yeah, it was gorgeous, and the geology was just fascinating to me. I mean, as a geologist, I was just fascinated by the geology.
Nice. And that takeout for that section is at a place called Swayze's. Is that right?
Yeah, we pulled out at Swayze.
Okay.
So, and then I think it was that the next year in 2019 in the spring, I think in April, I went down there with three other friends, and we kayaked from Swayze to Crystal Geyser.
Okay, so let's talk through that. Now, Swayze's is above the Tusher Diversion Dam, which takes water out of the Green River to irrigate the big Green River Utah Valley there.
Yeah.
And then you have to go through the town of Green River. The river runs right through town. You really can't see that you are under the town there until you get to the state park, and there's some bridges, the highway bridge and the railroad bridge and another highway bridge, and then below that, not too far down on the left, is the Crystal Geyser. Did you do that as a day section, as a day run?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we had come out the previous October, but two of the guys, the truck broke down on the way out there, and then we just had some really bad weather, and it ended up snowing in that area, and so we opted not to do any kayaking, and so my friend and I that we stayed in Moab and did some touristy stuff, and then went out and met up with our friends whose truck had broken down, and of course it was on a holiday weekend, so they had to wait in the middle of nowhere, Utah.
Oh, gosh.
For a shop to open up today.
Yeah.
So, but they were able to get their car fixed enough to get it back to Las Vegas. But then I came out, the same group we came out in like I said, April the next year, and founded that out. So, so that was fun.
And that's it's interesting. You leave Green River, Utah, in a big, wide open valley, and you go in through some rolling hills. You get to the Crystal Geyser again. You're back in a wide open valley there, and then it necks in, and below the geyser, you enter Labyrinth, and then Stillwater Canyons, and you've got about 120 miles or so to go to get to the confluence of the Green and the Colorado. And how and when did you do that section there?
Well, I can't remember the exact date, but it was I think that was in 2018.
Okay.
And that was in August, and so it was fairly warm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was late August because we ended up and I had rented a canoe and some kit from an outfitter in Moab.
Okay.
And so my brother was supposed to do it with me, and at the last minute he canceled because of work concerns. And so I was trying to find someone to go with, and a friend of mine agreed to go, and I said, great. Okay, so, you know, we pack up the boat. We're 100 yards from shore, and he says, I need to tell you something. I go, what? He says, I've never been in a canoe before.
Okay.
I said, you think maybe you should have told me that before? And he said, well, I was afraid you were going to say I couldn't come.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. Good. What did you do?
Well, it was a learning experience. So it was just a lot of coaching.
Okay.
And teaching him the J stroke and to paddle when we get a headwind.
Good for you. I'm assuming the water was kind of low. And there would have been a lot of nice sandbar camps.
There were. It was really a pleasant journey. We had to do a bit of what I called walking the canoe because it was so, some of the water was so low that two of us couldn't sit in the boat.
Oh, wow.
So I got out, just grabbed the bowline, and then just towed us through the shallow part back into the deeper water.
Okay.
So I called it walking the canoe.
Cool,
but,
yeah.
But that, of all the sections of the river I've done, that's actually one of my favorite.
Okay.
Labyrinth and Stillwater. It is just, it was beautiful. I mean, just the beauty of the canyon, but also the solitude.
Mm.
Because we only saw people the very first day and then the end of our second to last day and the last day when the jet boat from Moab picked us up at the confluence. The Green in the Colorado, and it was glorious. I've never experienced solitude like that.
Nice.
And it was just phenomenal.
Very cool. So now as a geologist, you're touching upon not only the geology of the landscape that the river goes through, but its potential for solitude, the recreational journey.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's one of the things I'll just make note of is that the difference between some of the sections of the river, especially when the lower Colorado below Hoover Dam, was that just the benefits of public land and especially national park and national monument, there's a world of difference between, you know, kayaking through developed areas or boating through developed areas and through these wilderness areas that have been preserved, you know, largely through the efforts of, you know, the National Park Service and with the Antiquities Act of 1906.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's just a world of difference. I mean, not that I don't, every part of the river is fun to be on, but the stark difference between private ownership and public land, especially when it's managed, in my opinion, correctly, it's striking, the difference.
Interesting. Okay. Huh. Okay, well, so the jet boat picks you up below the confluence or around that area. down to Spanish Bottom is as far as the jet boat goes, and people in canoes go down that far into Cataract Canyon. Then you need to run Cataract. How did you run that section?
Well, again, I did it with a commercial trip, an outfitter out of my lab.
Okay.
And one of the, I think we had three boats, and we put in at Potash, and went down. I think we went through the confluence on the second day.
Okay.
The third, and then we did, did the drops and the other rapids through Cat, and ended up at taken out at the I forget the name of the. I call it height, but...
Yeah, North Wash.
North Wash, the North
right.
Wash.
Right.
Quote-unquote boat ramp.
And it's confusing there because height, the actual town and ferry, is 10 miles downstream under the silts of the reservoir behind Glen Canyon Dam.
Right.
But the Park Service created a ramp and a concession at what they call the Height Marina.
Yeah,
which is high and dry and defunct. So, yeah. The takeout's at North Wash, but it's very confusing at first glance to people who don't necessarily know the history of the place or understand what's going on there.
Right.
And your trip through Cataract, what time of year was that?
It was July.
Okay, early July or late July?
I think it was early July.
Okay, I'm thinking the flows might have still been in the 20,000s then.
Yeah, we have pretty good water.
Okay.
And the bowmen were really good. It was a good one. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, good. And you could sort of go through this wrecking yard, geological wrecking yard. Which kind of makes the rapids there in Cataract Canyon as the rock units are so fractured and all beat up, and they just dribble down into this canyon and make rapids and cause lots of mayhem when it rains.
Yeah, it was a really good trip, and I'll just like a small anecdote. When we were first at Potash, you know, we're getting all packed up, and I was standing in line with the restroom with the one of the other clients, and his experience with anything whitewater was a one-day trip in Costa Rica.
Oh, wow.
Kind of a luxury thing. And he, I didn't know him from Adam. He turns to me and says, "I don't want to be here. My wife is making me do this."
Oh, my gosh.
This was going to be fun. But he and his family turned out to be just a real a good group of people.
Oh, good.
So
cool.
But I'm a little bit concerned there.
And, of course, when you launch at Potash, you get to go down through Meander Canyon, which is a gorgeous bit of flat water, just like Stillwater, on the other arm. To meet up there at the confluence, so that's a lovely piece of section to boat through as well there.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. Okay, so from North Wash, there's been a good river current going down into Glen Canyon, which is all controlled by Glen Canyon Dam. So when Glen Canyon Dam is at full pool, it backs water all the way up to the foot of the big drops up in Cataract Canyon, but it hasn't been at full pool for a while, which means the river now is boring down, augering down through massive 60-foot-high sediment banks to get down to the lower reaches of the reservoir, where there's still a fairly big reservoir. How did you deal with that section from North Wash down to Waweep, which is basically just a mile above Glen Canyon Dam, a 250-mile run.
I rented a motorboat.
Where did you put in, and how did you do that?
We rented it at Waweep.
Okay.
And then motored down to the creek arm there of the reservoir, and then piloted up to the dam and then started heading up lake.
Okay.
And we spent 4 days.
All right.
Going up to North Wash and back.
So you have to be pretty careful with your fuel, because you got to get all the way to Bullfrog to get gas, right?
Yeah.
So you make that run. Go ahead.
We did some touristy things. We went, you know, to Rainbow Bridge.
Okay.
And I had a geologic guide for the National Recreation Area, and we went and saw some dinosaur tracks. We went to see some ancestral Puebloan ruins, and so that was a lot of fun. But I mean, it was like we did boat camping, and it was just like, you know, we just pull up on the shore and set up camp and cook dinner, and it was like car camping only in a boat. And,
right.
It was really fun. It was really relaxing. This is my love hate relationship that I have with the reservoir.
Uh-huh.
The destruction of Glen Canyon makes me hate it, but I had such a good time. And you know, you've got that deep blue water, you've got the red and buff colored sandstone cliffs and bluebird skies with fluffy white clouds. I mean, we had a great time, but at the same time, you're a little bit more, not a little bit, but quite a bit mournful about what's gone. And
it's a testament to Glen Canyon about how even you tear half of it away and the remaining half is still amazingly beautiful.
Right.
What it must have been as a whole, as an integral whole, that's where the people that were there, they call it the place no one knew, but it's actually a place that a lot of people did know, and what they recall is amazing. So, yeah. Mm. Okay, so getting that motorboat up to North Wash, did you actually have to push up through some current to get there?
Yeah, for about, I think around less than 10 miles.
Okay.
I mean, there's, I can't remember. It's in my notes. But there was all this, you know, once there was all this debris coming down the river, and then once it meets where there's no current, you know, it just kind of sits there. And so
right.
We had to pick our way carefully through that. And then once we were through that, we're fighting the current and made it all the way up to North Washington. Waved at, there were a couple raptors taken out there, waved at them, turned around, and
took
came
off.
Back down. Yeah.
In that section, in the last couple years, there's been a short section, maybe a quarter mile long, that's called the Gates of Mordor, and it's moving, and the reservoirs drop substantially, and there's a lot of silt that's being actively cut out by the river.
Mm-hmm.
Did you run through that Mordor section?
No, I don't think it was there when we were doing that. I mean, the lake was really, that was in 2019, and so that was another
okay.
high water here.
So, okay.
I think the lake level was fairly high.
Got it. That's going to be an artifact that would have started to be created not long after you guys made your run. Okay. All right. So that gets you all the way to the top of, well, the top of Glen Canyon Dam.
Mm-hmm.
Then the smooth water rafting goes from the base of the dam down, but you can also get a boat back up from Lee's Ferry up to the dam and then float back down. How did you handle that section there?
I went with it, and this was in October 2016 that I did that. I did the, I just did the commercial motorized rafting. But this coming October, we're gonna get a haul back and do it the right way.
Okay.
In context.
Okay.
So doing that with some friends of mine.
Fun. Okay, so that gets you then to Lee's Ferry. Below Lee's Ferry is the Grand Canyon section, 280 miles long. To Pierce Ferry and Pierce Ferry Rapid, where you've already taken us around there to Lake Mead, the Lake Mead area. When did you run the Grand Canyon section?
I did that in July 2017.
Okay.
And because of, you know, as you're well acquainted with the difficulties of getting a permit, I went with a commercial company, which was actually my first multi-day trip on the river. So that was kind of interesting.
Okay, so back up, let me make sure that I get you to say this again. Because it was so difficult for you to get a do-it-yourself permit, you booked a commercial trip.
Correct. And also, my skill level at that time, and probably still, I would not feel comfortable with just me rowing through some of the rapids in the canyon.
Okay. All right, but would you feel comfortable with a group of do-it-yourself people?
Definitely.
Some of who thought they had the skills to try it.
Definitely.
Right. Okay. All right.
And then I'm gonna do it again.
Okay.
That's on my list of.
So are you on the lottery? You're actively, you know, trying to win one of those.
Not yet. I've got some. I got to put together. I'm still concentrating on all the other stuff that I'm doing.
All right. Well, let's keep working on that then. How was your Grand Canyon trip? What did you see? What did you learn there?
It was really nice. I mean, I'm still friends on Facebook with some of the people.
Okay.
That were on the trip. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, no matter what kind of trip it is, you usually form lasting relationships with,
yep,
people, and,
sure,
friendships and people that are following my journey now, and it was good. You know, I had brought along the old BYU geology guides for the different sections of the canyon.
Is that by Hamlin and Rigby?
Yeah.
Great.
So, and those were, you know, invaluable for me, and but I try to keep quiet that I'm a geologist on some of these trips. I don't want people to feel intimidated or that, you know, that I'm going to be critiquing them.
Which, right.
You know, I always learn something new. So, and most of the people know good stuff. So, we did that. And it was a really good trip. I mean, there were, except for, well, not except. It was a good group, traveled well together. It was just 30 people is a little much.
Interesting. After running, you know, Labyrinth Stillwater with you and your buddy who doesn't know how to run a canoe, you know, traveling 280 miles through Grand Canyon with 30 other folks. Okay. Good.
Yeah.
Good to know. Okay.
So, and then the last part that I did in the, I think it was summer 2019, probably August. I remember it being really hot.
Okay.
I rented a motorboat at Temple Bar on Lake Mead. And just drove up to South Cove and then down to the buoy at the base of the Overton Arm, which is where the Virgin River came in, and that's where Powell stopped his journey. So, but not his men. Apparently, some of them went down all the way down to the...
Jack Sumner and Andy Hall went all the way to the sea.
Yeah.
So is that your journey now, to get to the sea?
That is. So after I completed this, I took a couple months off, and then the pandemic happened.
Okay.
And so summer 2020, and I'm getting a little bit antsy, and I had a slip and fall in a restaurant, so I torn my hamstring. So,
ooh,
I'm really inactive, putting on a little weight. So I decided that, well, I'm just going to start paddling from Hoover Dam as far down to as close to the Mexican border as I can get.
Okay.
So I did that over 3 years. I did that mostly sequentially in sections, basically from dam to dam, and would put take out above the dam and would put in right below the dam.
Okay.
And there's a lot of dams, and
yeah,
it's really developed. There's a lot of motorboat traffic. Learned how to contend with that. I've read some trip reviews of some people that have done it, and there seems to be a contentious relationship with kayakers and the motorboats, but I didn't really see that. I attribute it more to that the boaters aren't paying attention and they can't see you.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think there's any malice there. They're just not paying attention.
Okay. So that section I want to say, 500 miles, 450 miles from Hoover Dam to the border?
Yeah, I think that's about right, yeah.
And
so it took 3 years to do, and I just finished it last spring.
Congratulations. Wow.
I got as close to the Mexican borders as I could.
Okay.
There's some tribal land that we had to avoid. Some of the border wall shenanigans that the former governor of Arizona left a bad taste in the mouth of the Kokopa. So they put up these big, huge no trespassing signs.
Hmm. Okay.
On the land before there was some river access on their land.
Oh.
But my understanding.
Okay. And did you do that last section manually with a paddle, or did you rent a motorboat to do that?
The entire part except for Lake Havasu, I did in a kayak.
Okay.
So, and that my favorite part of that section was, I think it's the Havasu Wildlife Refuge. Topok, or no, I guess it's the Topok, Topok Gorge area.
Yes.
That was one of my favorite sections. It's just beautiful.
Yeah.
There, it's just really nice. So, I didn't care for Lake Havasu.
Okay.
Big party thing, lots and lots of boat traffic, which is why I did it in a boat rather than a kayak, because I didn't want to get killed.
Okay.
So.
Fair enough.
And then at the same time, for the last couple years, in conjunction with that, my friend Dan and I have been doing the Upper Green above Green River, Wyoming.
Okay. Because my next question for you is, all right, so now you've run from Green River, Wyoming to the Mexican border. You don't have much further to go to start from the Wind Rivers to get to Green River, Wyoming, and then get from the border down to the Sea of Cortez. So tell me about you and Ann up above Green River, Wyoming.
Well, we did 1 year, we did several days of really long days of, 20, 30 miles of kayaking.
Wow.
And we got from Fontanelle Dam, the base of Fontanelle Dam, all the way to Green River, Wyoming.
So okay.
We filled in that section. And then earlier this year, in the summer, in July, we did some from Green River. We had done a little bit on Green River Lakes downstream, but we did more, and we got down to, I can't remember, but we did 70 more miles on it. I've got about 70 miles left to connect up that section that we finished last July to connect up to Fontanelle Dam.
Okay.
Doing it before too. So we're working on that. And then every year, I also tried to do a Westwater Canyon trip and to shoot one of the outfitters there that I know. And so I shoot him some business, especially during the pandemic. And so we did it, do a West Water trip every year. And so one year, I just rented a condo in Moab for 5 days. And then with two other people, we brought our kayaks. And then we kayaked all the way from using the commercial trip for West Water, kayaked all the way from Loma all the way to Potash.
Great.
So.
And Loma, of course, is basically Grand Junction.
And then we did, last year I did the 15 miles above Loma from Grand Junction. I think it was Red Drive Boat Ramp.
Okay.
All the way down to Loma.
Great.
And then I've got all that upper part above there to do.
So now I'm rocking back on my heels going, wait a minute. Now, not only are you looking to go from source to sea, but you're looking at doing that on the two main arms of the Colorado River, the Green and the Colorado, which used to be called the Grand, from the confluence up to Lake Granby, up in Rocky Mountain National Park.
Yes.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm starting to do parts of kayaking, parts of the Yampa. I did 50 miles on the San Juan from Mexican Hat, kayaked that to Clay Hills.
Great.
And I was going to do from Sand Island to Mexican Hat this year, earlier this month, but it was going to be early this month, but I was in overseas for work, so I couldn't take advantage of that permit, so I had to give that up.
Okay.
But the river's not going anywhere. Well, at least not yet.
So let's go up to 30,000 feet. We've been walking the river shore here for quite a while. Up at 30,000 feet, maybe even 60,000 or 100,000, you can see, you get up high enough on Google Earth where you can see the source and you can see the Sea of Cortez down there where the river ends. What are your thoughts now about the Colorado River, given the fact that you've seen about 90% of it, maybe 95%?
Well, as a river runner and as a hydrologist with the Department of the Interior, I'm concerned. And, you know, especially, I mean, you can see, my understanding is that, you know, I live in Las Vegas, and so Las Vegas gets its share of hate or, you know, water waste and whatever, but 80% of the water out of the basin is used for agriculture. And I'm not sure, especially I'm sure that there are better uses crop wise for the water than cotton and alfalfa.
Okay.
They grow a lot of cotton. The Pima cotton in Arizona is very famous, like a cotton, and something's got to be done where we convince the agriculture to the farmers to use different crops that are more or less water intensive, and that may be involving subsidies from the government to help them do new infrastructure or grow different crops so that they're not losing money. And it's also going to involve some sort of change in our water law. Because, you know, there's the whole concept of Western water laws. You know, there's two very simplified concepts. Is that first in time, first in right, and if you don't use it, you lose it. And we've got to, so that the farmers, if they're worried that if they don't use their full allocation of water, that it's going to be reduced for them, and they don't want to have that happen. And
right.
And I see a little bit of that. The prior priority rights issues are being looked at in a few court cases here in Nevada. Mainly it has to do with groundwater.
Okay.
But I really think that we need some changes to our water law, and we need subsidies to help that, to help farmers switch over to different water use, lower water intensive use crops, and different infrastructure to help them save water. And, you know, they shouldn't be penalized for conserving water. And I know that that's a real simple thing of a very complex issue.
Right, right. Yeah, I was going to say there's a whole couple hours we could talk about that topic. But that's fascinating that what your journey through the basin helped you understand is our antiquated vision of water use.
Right.
If I could boil that down to a sentence.
Yeah. That's a great sentence to boil it down
to. I'm thinking there's two things that I wanted to ask you about, and one is, of course, this antiquated system of water use, which goes into the law of the river and first in time construct. The second is floods. And as a geologist and as somebody who has been on the river and seen logs, pine trees perched on boulders 100 feet above the current water level, is that something that gives you pause?
It does, in the fact that I'm amazed at the power of the river. I think on some of the stuff, when I was going through the Grand Canyon, you could see some of the high water mark, you know, 30 feet above. I'm not sure what the regulated flow through the canyon that we'll ever experience any of that again, to be honest. I mean, I know we have our high flow experiment water coming through, but that's not the same thing as natural flow.
No, it's not.
But, I mean, the river's so, you know, except for very few sections, is very regulated with terms of flow.
I guess one thing I'm thinking of, and maybe you can help me, you know, maybe I need to cleanse this vision from my soul here. I just look at the historic hydrograph, and going back into the paleo hydrograph, mm-hmm. and the basin has the potential to really pick up its skirts and dance, if you will, I just don't know that the plumbing structure we have in place with a stair-step dam system can survive some of the real get-up-and-giddy-up water events that the basin has provided in the past. And so while we're trying to figure out how to get the water kind of, you know, sorted out in times of scarcity, during times of plenty, we may be trying to, you know, hold on to the plumbing system to keep it from washing downstream.
I think that's a fair statement. I think that, you know, especially with climate change, we're going to see more extreme weather events.
Okay.
I mean, this just this last week and a half, you know, we're getting prepared. At least here in Vegas, for the tropical storm Hillary coming in, you know, the hurricane formerly known as Hillary, and there was a lot of concern. And there was actually up in the Spring Mountains, there was a lot of, they got like eight or 9 inches all at once.
Whoa.
Which is, you know, too much for them to handle. And some of the infrastructure up there was in the houses. And, you know, there's a little tiny ski area. It's not tiny, tiny, but there's a little ski area up there, and some of the stuff got damaged there.
This is just west of Las Vegas?
Correct.
Okay.
And there was some flooding in certain areas on the strip and stuff, but California got hit pretty hard. But those are some of we're going to be these extreme weather events. We're going to see more and more of these with the changing climate. And so it very well could be that, you know, we see some of these very extreme flash events in the Colorado Basin that could damage infrastructure.
Okay, so I guess that's sort of, we have to look forward and we have to look back, or we have to keep an eye in the rearview mirror as we're all looking forward at the drought and water remanagement. We have to keep an eye behind us on a flood.
Right. I mean, there's a famous axiom in geology, the present is the key to the past. So the past is also the key to the present.
Interesting. Well, this has been a really wonderful discussion. I really appreciate your time. As we wrap this thing up here, is there anything that I didn't ask you about your vision as you've gone through most of the Colorado River watershed here that you wanted to mention?
No, I don't think so. I guess the only thing I need to do a disclaimer that all my views expressed do not necessarily reflect those of my employer.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. This is a Sunday afternoon, people should know, and this is your day off. So that kind of disclaimer is important.
Yes. So especially given my employer.
Awesome.
So, but no, I, you know, Tom, it has been a pleasure getting to know you and to meet you. And, you know, and I have extensively used your guidebooks. And, you know, it was wonderful yesterday. It's hard to believe it was just yesterday. it was wonderful to meet you in real life yesterday. That was really a highlight.
Well, it was a two-way street for me too, because I've been Facebook stalking you and your journeys, and so I really appreciate your taking the time to visit today, and I'm looking forward to getting this recording out there so people can hear about sort of a holistic approach and an integral vision of the Colorado River in the southwestern United States, which I think is really important. Thank you for your service to the federal government. And your broad vision of the place you work for. I just think that's really important. So thank you for that. And with that, this will conclude today's V-Wave podcast with Wayne Belcher. My name is Tom Martin, and Wayne, hold the line. And thank you so very, very much.